Listen, germs, welcome back. All right. We're going to play some sick jams. All right. Well, welcome back to Independent Incidentals. All right, man. All right. We're going to be playing the hits, man. We're going to play some dead rock for y'all. Yeah, baby. All right. We're going to play only Mastodon. We're only going to play Mastodon. Streetlight Manifesto.
System of a Down. I can't hold the bit. I love pretending that I'm a 90s Italian disco artist in the 90s, and I just live there now. I was changed by it. That's actually a concept I had for one of my D&D encounters. I'm like, what if like a beholder, like a gigantic eye creature with a bunch of tiny eye stalks that protrude from its head, found a speaker from the real world. It accidentally changed him into like a disco creature that forces people to disco for the rest of their life. That's the idea I've had recently. It's kind of like Medusa, except if turning people to stone just made them dance eternally, right? That's not a bad idea either, if I'm being honest. The second idea is a free idea. The first idea is mine. Sorry, you can't have it. You won't even know how to make the mechanics work. You don't know D&D like I know D&D. That's a lie, actually. I've barely read the books. I just do what's fun. Isn't that what really play is all about? And we'll talk all about that. You and me, we're just in the void right now, but we'll talk about that in the show right now when I'm transported into the live environment where people can hear me right now. Live, but you can't hear me right now. You're listening to me in the past. I'm in the past. Help! Help me! I won't exist when you're listening to me. Don't you realize that, idiot? That's how time works. You're just listening to the reverberations of my voice. Sorry, I didn't mean to call you an idiot. You're actually very intelligent. I just get a little heated.
Oh, what am I gonna do? Oh, what am I gonna do? The people are wishing for me to come back with guns a-blazing, and my hands swinging, and my forehead twitching, and my eyebrows, crunching?
I don't know. It's getting away from me now. Point is that people are expecting a whole-out ball-out, but I don't have anything to really give. But you know what I will give? I'll give my all. That's what I will give. Because you can't spell all, you can't, it's you all, it's so stupid, what am I saying, man? I was going to say you can't spell y'all without all, but it's just a contraction of you all. I'm not built for this, man, I'm not built for wordplay. You gotta cut me a break. Oh, no. A lot of people were talking to me about how, you know, the episodes haven't been uploaded yet. Well, how about you edit them, huh? Yeah, that's what I thought. That's what I freaking thought. No, but they're going to get uploaded soon. Don't worry. You're going to be listening to this. I don't know who I'm talking to. I should be saying this in the actual broadcast. But besides the point, look, I'm just saying that you'll get your food. You'll get your food. You're listening to it right now. You're getting your food. You've gotten your food. You're eating your food. You're loving your food, all right? This is your food now. You eat your food now. I was thinking also of just giving random people business cards on the street. That sounds funny. I just imagine, like, me in, like, a top hat with snazzy, dazzling clothes and just giving people business cards of Radio... Radio Laurier's Independent Incidentals.
Hey, I see. You want to join? You want to listen to the show? Well, right here, Buster, you can listen, you can just scan the QR, right here. Have it right now, you can scan it and you can listen to the show.
Anyway, that's just a food for thought. I'm gonna do the show now, so if you don't mind. Yeah, that's what I thought.
Ladies and germs, welcome back to Independent Incidentals. Welcome back, everybody. I'm your ever-faithful host, Dominic Mueller, and today we'll be going through a whole menagerie of different topics, because I was sick! The COVID crud, as my sister called it.
The COVID crud, you call it.
Okay, that's fair. You know what? Valid. It's valid. But let's first talk about what happened. Let's get some more context. I'm so sorry, you guys. I left you alone for 3 weeks. And you know what? I'm sorry. You guys deserve more as my faithful fan base. And I just left you out to dry, you know? I'm kind of like a father figure to you all. And I just kind of... Your favorite video game show host on RadioLaurier.com left you for 3 weeks. And you know what? It's not my fault. Classic YouTuber apology. It's not my fault, okay? I didn't do it. I didn't want to. Well, let's quickly recap what happened. Okay, so normally I do it every second week, every Wednesday at 3, right? That's the normal schedule. That's the normal primo schedule. Actually, I think is it at 3? No, it is at 3. I don't even know my own schedule. That's how much this show means to me, I guess. So 3 o'clock usually, yada, yada, yada. You know the drill, right? I was planning to do the show this week anyway, even though this new studio has been set up for quite a while. So it didn't really matter about the studio itself. That I will not blame. What I will blame is the COVID crud, as my sister called it. The COVID crud. What is the COVID crud, you may ask? Well, when you go to a convention, the con, not the COVID crud, what am I talking about? The COVID crud. It's not COVID. Don't worry about it. I didn't get COVID. I just got a nasty little flu during my expedition with my sister to DashCon 2. Yay. I went to DashCon 2. It's so interesting. Just the idea of going to a convention that's mainly meant... built for Tumblr arenas, I think they're called. Besides the point, I guess I'm a part of them now. I guess I invoked the ritual of their tribe, and now I'm a part of them. So that's good. But I'm back. I'm in the new studio now. It's so cool. It's air-conditioned. You can hear a little bit of echo, because if you've seen on the video, there is no actual padding that is set up at the moment. So there's a little bit of an echo. But that doesn't matter too much, because we're just having fun, you and I. We're just having fun right now, so it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. We can still have fun, even though I'm echoey. Please. Please. I'm sorry, okay? I tried my best. I'm sure you'll forgive me, though, right? You are all my adored fans who I love and cherish as if they were my own children. And it's definitely not weird, not cult-like, definitely not 100%. So, you can hear the echo. Fun. There's Lightning McQueen that's been a bit disemboweled, a little scalped, perhaps. His eyeballs are kind of dangling out, as you saw in the video as well, I presume. But you know what? Hey, look. Here's what I wanted to do recently, right? I've been kind of neglecting the whole ecosystem around my general space of Bibiogame. So what I'm deciding to do now is to do a little new segment. Ba 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 ba. I wish I had like a cool news anchor thing, but all I got is this. New segment. Hold on, let's see if they got a better one. News segment! New video game news, alright man, alright. What is in the game's news today? Well, we got a few news objects to talk about during my 3-week-long hiatus. The first, utmost important one is the Stop Killing Games initiative reaching its goal. If you don't know what it is, essentially the idea is that a person who was in the games industry in the UK had enough about all these game companies trying to take away our damn games. And that's kind of the very, 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 very simplistic rendition of this kind of... I guess petition you would call it. Yes, it would be a petition. Because it needed 1 million signatures across a bunch of different countries in the EU amongst a bunch of different small quotients that it needed to meet within each different country, right? So the UK had to get like 100,000 or something, and a few other countries had to also push in a certain amount, right? An amount of signatures that are valid and are able to be counted, right? The whole purpose is to make sure to give a little bit more context. The whole purpose of this initiative is to ensure that video games become preserved. The preservation of a video game is preserved when you buy it. Because if you don't know, the video games that you buy online through certain places like Steam, Ubisoft, etc., can be taken away from you. Since we're not even dissing the live service model. That's a whole different other discussion. That is not as bad as what we're talking about right now. The point of this is that if, say, the servers go down, or if anything happens to the internals of the game dies. The game dies, and there's no way to actually play it anymore, right? People want to play the game that they bought. And if they can't buy the game after 5 years' time, after all of the infrastructure around the game, like the servers or the actual, like, I guess, player base dissolves, right? The basic idea is that they would have to install, these companies that make these games would have to install a kind of model or a plan to ensure that these games can be playable when they have gone down, when they've gone under, when they have no longer been able to support the game, right? Of course, we got a lot of different backlash in a lot of different areas regarding this thing, which I won't necessarily go too deep into. I'm just giving the surface level. Because I obviously had a lot of things prepared, but I don't necessarily have an opinion about it just yet. I want to do a bit more research about it. So that's the basic brass tacks. What I can tell you about, though, also... CSGO gambling is back on the rise! Why? We have gambling, right? Which is you giving money to possibly get more money! But also the possibility to get no money. Take that idea, turn it into a non-fungible format, such as, you know, video game skins, decals on your guns, different fun things like that, cracking loot boxes, cranking 90s on CSGO, couldn't be. I personally hate online gambling, and I further hate the idea of CSGO gambling as a whole. There's a whole CoffeeZilla video, if you want to watch that. It's very well done, really well researched, about all the entire ecosystem around this stuff. There's so much story and so much meat on this bone that I could talk about. But I think the main thing I want to talk about is just the idea. The idea that literally so many... The society is going to go under, man. I'm telling you. This is terrible. This is genuinely... Like, imagine you have a 13-year-old child, right, who decides to, with their own money, or even your own money, the parents' own money, attempts to steal your money and purchase ones and zeros on a computer game that literally could go up, and it's literally, you're letting your kid play stocks. You're letting your kid play stocks, but worse, because it's like there's no ecosystem here, man. Don't even get me started with the actual, like, offline stuff, because this is where kids get pulled in, right? They watch their favorite YouTubers cracking open cases and then selling them on third-party websites, which then get auctioned off and could get sold for more money, right? There's very few that actually check your credentials on whether or not you're 18 or over, which is absolutely absurd to me. Where are we going with this? I don't know. Just watch the CoffeeZilla video. It'll clear up everything and tell him I sent you. Or don't. I really don't care. So, where's the topic today? I thought we're going to do another, what did I call it again? The Missing Miscellaneous Episode 3. Missing Miscellaneous Episode 3 is a sub-series I run that I talk about random stuff that I've just been doing and I've been engaging in. So it could be something that's a little bit more less niche. It could be something that's less niche. It could be something that's a completely overarching topic. But it will always lead back. It'll always lead back to something a little bit more homegrown, if you know what I mean. So, what are we talking about today? I think the main thing, the main talking points we're going to talk about is fantasy genre. I called this episode All Roads Lead to Tolkien, which is true in a sense. But the first topic I want to get under my belt is reading habits. How do you read, audience? Do you read with book? Do you read digitally? Do you read audiobook with your ear holes? It's really up to you personally. It's all in your personal preference. But what I noticed a lot, the trend of composite students, surprisingly, are on either polar ends. Literally, I don't think I've met a single person who is a comp sci student and listens to audiobooks, first of all. Second of all, they either love reading or they absolutely hate reading physical books. There's no middle ground on this. Either you love reading physical books or you absolutely hate it. It's kind of like a horseshoe, right? You're either so consumed by digital spaces that a book in the flesh world, and this is my view of what people believe. So if you don't, if you disagree with my take and why you read e-books, please let me know. But you're so consumed by like digital spaces that like the meat space, the flesh world, whatever you want to call reality, is too alien. So you know, you just don't like the tactile feeling of picking up a book anymore because it's not. It's not like, it's too old for you. You're new, you're hip. Yeah, all right. Right? Or you're so exhausted by using computers and all that kind of stuff that something analog, you having to flip through pages is actually, you know, novel. You see what I did there? A novel? Because you're flipping, it's like a novel, you're reading a novel. And I exist in the second camp, no doubt. But more on the basis of like authenticity. Like, I like how cinema nuts, whatever you want to call them, demand that there's a theater, that the theater is like a prime place to watch a movie, I exist in the camp of, you know, reading a book is the prime place to inspire your imagination, right? It's not only you're just creating a world in your brain, but also you're trying to create ideas, concepts, relating them together. And it's just a fun little challenge, you know? Like, in this kind of weird cyberspace we've created where everything is economized and efficient. Efficientized? Is that a word? Optimized. Thank you. Everything's optimized. Everything is efficient. Everything, you know, is given to you like a sweet trickle off a tree, you know? You snap at your robot butler, "Garçon, give me more essays, please. Give me more! No, not like that. I want you to talk like a pirate when you say it. God, you don't get anything right." I prefer to do my own stuff, you know? I prefer to do my own thing. Audiobooks and ebooks, I just can't do them. I'm sorry. It's too taxing on me. Like, I feel like if I started reading and listening to audiobooks and reading ebooks, I'd start to become a husk of a human being. Like, I think reading is the only thing that really gives me life. It's the only thing that actually, like, you know, energizes me, or at least allows me to be a human being that's functional in this world. I don't know if you felt like that before, but that's what I feel like anyway. Like, I feel like if you give yourself too much, like, I've given myself too much to the ecosystem already. Like, I've divulged in video games, I go on social media, all that blah, 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 junk garbage that's entering my brain. So if I add any more junk garbage that's entering my brain, then I will not think of it anymore. I'll become autonomous. I'll become nothing. I'll become a speck on this globe that we call the Earth. So I will stick to my physical books. But if you have a different opinion, please let me know. I'm so curious. Anyway. A real physical book that I've been reading recently is the Two Towers. I think it's just called Two Towers. Besides the point, it's the second book in the Lord of the Rings series. I guess third if you count the Hobbit, but we don't count that right now, right? I read that like 5 years ago. Yeah, it was in 2020 when I read The Hobbit. It's so interesting. So, essentially, Tolkien, I think what I have to remind myself a lot when I'm reading the Lord of the Rings series, especially when I'm trying to get through, like, it's very slow-paced. And I have to remind myself that for this time, Tolkien was revolutionary. He was, like, out of the box with a lot of this stuff that he was adding to the fantasy genre, right? A lot of simple folks are put into an adventure they have to struggle through, and they're actually changed by it. Rather than just becoming a heroic idiot, they're not pulling the sword out of the stone like some stupid idiot who's just given him prophecy. No, these people are actually fighting against something and are going through internal conflict. That was revolutionary for the time, let you know. There's not a lot of stories that go through that were fantasy novels specifically, right? Well, that's the thing, right? It wasn't really fantasy. A lot of this stuff, again, was pulled from his history as a linguist and a historian. Tolkien was the one who did it first, in a sense, right? He was the kind of one of the first pioneers of fantasy as a whole, understanding elves and dwarves and living on a cool planet called Middle Earth and, you know, all the different stuff that goes along with it, right? He was one of the first people to do it. I'm not saying he was the first, because I didn't research that part, but I'm saying he was the one of the first. He was a linguist as a historian, as we know. He knew not only the lore of these mythologies he pulled from, but he also knew how they would grow and blossom and how societies would be built and fall and all these different intricacies that he was building when he was creating his world, right? He was one of the first world builders, in a sense. He was, like, kind of engineering what he wanted inside of a world, which was really interesting. He had a whole different, like, knowledge base for all this kind of stuff. It's so cool, right? So this is what I have to tell myself. I don't know if I'm coping or... This is the thing, right? I don't know if I'm coping or not. Because it's, like, I think this stuff is really cool. But at the same time, you can talk about a... You can't talk about a grassy knoll for, like, 3 pages, please. Just let me go. I want to hear about how Gandalf got back and he came again off the white. Please. Sorry, spoilers. It's 100 years old. I think that's fine. I don't think I have to worry about spoilers in this context, because I think people know that Gandalf fell into the pit and became the white one. The one with the white robes instead of the one with the gray robes. You get me, right? He also had, like, a bunch of different things, too. Like, he had economies built. He had, like, different heritages built. He had a whole society. He had, like, languages and, like, poems that were written in Elvish and stuff. Like, how does one do this, right? It could have just been a growing fascination, obviously, with his history as a linguist, right? He knows how languages were built and are fundamentally grow and change, right? But also, it's something that he kind of grew up in, not only from his passion and later in life, but also from his childhood. I was researching a little bit about this, and he apparently had 2 cousins back when he was, like, around 11 years old, who made up a language called Animalic. Animalic. Animalic? Animalic. I say language, but it's really just a cipher, in a sense. You map every word to an animal. Like, for example, I believe the phrase "you are an ass" is like otter nightingale 40, right? Because the word, so the word "ass" is referring to a donkey, which in this case in Animalic is 40, right? The word 40. So basically you map every single word to an animal. That's essentially it. People outside of this joke obviously found this childish and a nuisance, but it was essentially a form of play between children, right? It was just like throwing the old ball around, but more, I'd say not necessarily intellectually, but more so just, you know, passively, hypothetically, you know, it's kind of in this fun hypothetical space where we can play around and pretend that Animalic is a real language, you know, that kind of thing. I think this is very important for people. This is like what I feel like this is obviously one of the fundamental elements in his writing that led to his success. this kind of still childlike wonder that's still permeated inside of his very being, even after his service to the war, right? He was also a part of the, he was conscripted to the UK army, right? Or is it the, I don't know, it doesn't matter. Point was, is that he served on the front lines, and that was obviously a part of his experience too, right? Theory and learning about history is one thing, right? Learning about how languages develop and grow is one thing. But placing Frodo inside of a hellscape battlefield in Mordor is probably all stemming from his service back in the army. Like, going out without food for days and stuff like that. And trying to distract yourself and, you know... The interesting thing I find a lot of in specific moments in the scene is when, like, the company or, like, when specific characters are walking together. They start out very cheery, right? When they go to the palace after, I think, Frodo gets nipped by one of the Black Riders, right? After they leave, they're, like, so cheery and they have, like, songs and they're doing, you're skipping and the frolic tulips and all that kind of fun jazz. But later, like, a couple weeks later, they start to just stop talking. I find that so interesting. It's like, almost like, you just get tired of people, you know? And I think a lot of this world building is not only just through just telling you about the history, but it's also through just seeing how Legolas and Gimli just, like, is that his name? I'm gonna call him Gimli, I don't care. How Legolas and Gimli start off as, like, bitter rivals, but then suddenly become friends, even though there's a whole history of elves hating dwarves, right? That kind of thing. Obviously, there's more problematic things that I learned a lot during... there's a lot more problematic things, I will admit. There's a lot more problematic things regarding, you know, how orcs are portrayed and all that kind of stuff. But, like, you know. I think for the time, I think it's pretty well diversified, personally. I could be wrong. Again, let me know. I could be completely wrong on this factory. But you know what? That's where the discourse comes in. If you want to challenge me, you can challenge me in the comments below. Right now. I don't know. You can just find them. Find them, I don't know. They're not on the website, I don't know that much. Or are they? Hold on. Or are they? I think The Hobbit specifically is an example of a story that exists purely on its knowledge, right? Because I think, obviously the Wikipedia article said that I read this from. The Hobbit was mainly designed to entertain his children, rather than becoming a whole cohesive narrative and a whole cohesive world. So obviously, you have characters, you have some cool times, you have some bad times, but they're not really... We don't really go too deep into actual warfare, you know? We don't go too deep in the suffering that the company has to go through in order to destroy the ring, you know? This stuff is sort of played up a little bit more softly. A little bit more, you know, kid-friendly. To be fair, I was around 15 at the time, which is probably good for me. It was good I started with the Hobbit, I'd say, because if I started with the first book of Lord of the Rings, I'd be extremely bored, and I wouldn't have any patience to finish it. And I think this kind of goes back to why I read physical books compared to audiobooks or ebooks. It's so much easier, I think, to pay attention to something that's actually in front of you, rather than something that's on a screen, or something that you're just hearing, right? It's because it's all about you, the amount of work that you put in, comparative to the amount of work that you, the amount of value that you're getting out of it, right? If you think that something is important to you, you'll internalize the thoughts, and you'll try to work to get it, right? You will continue to strive towards that goal, but if it doesn't matter to you, you're just going to tune it out. That's why I listen to podcasts. I don't listen to podcasts to get some deeper meaning to life. Like, that's what a show is for, right? That's what art is for, right? That's why I play the games like Disco Elysium. No. I think most importantly, I think just not, I don't think it's even to do with attention spans necessarily. I think it's mostly to do with the fact that people don't want to put that much effort in, right? If people can focus intently on things that they love, right? But that is mostly is things that we have commoditized, you know, commoditized, whatever, things that we've merchandised, things that we've kind of grown out of ourselves and we've put on the market, right? I'm becoming a philosopher. I want to let you know. I'm truly. I'm growing a beard as we speak. I think I'm starting to get white robes. I have a book in my hand for some reason. I'm pointing at the sky. I don't know what's going on. You damn kids, and you damn not listening. Back in my day, we cared about things, you know. God. So you know, I'll stick to my physical books. But if you want to get into just cataloging your books, and obviously, look, I'm not dissing necessarily you reading ebooks or audiobooks. They have the pros and cons. They're more portable. They can be easier accessible. You can actually listen to audiobooks when you're walking or when you're running and stuff like that. Like, obviously, there's a place for them, right? But I think there's also a place for physical books. And it's sad to me when I go into a library where there's only like 5 people in the shelves and there's like all the people on the computer. And this is coming from a computer science student, so you know this is bad. You know the world is truly screwed when the computer science student starts having radical views. But if you want to get more into actually reading books, I would recommend, this is not a promo, by the way, because that's not in my contract. You can go to a little website. There's obviously there's Goodreads, which is like fine, but it doesn't really give you all the statistics. If you want a real gamified version of all this kind of stuff that kind of drags you in a little bit further deep, I would recommend StoryGraph. StoryGraph is a fantastic place. I love StoryGraph so much. Mainly on the premise that it basically aggregates, it takes in all of the information of all the books that you've read, and it gives you a breakdown of all the different genres that you read. It's very interesting. I like it a lot, right? It gives you statistics about your genres. It gives you statistics about how much you rate stuff. It gives you statistics about pretty much a lot of stuff. Here's the thing. There's a paywall, obviously, for some things, but it gives you everything that you need with the free version. So you should just get it. You should just have it. You can track your reading time. You can have a Duolingo streak on it if you want. Like, you can have, like, a little, like, Duolingo streak. Like, it gives you, like, a little timer. And you can, or, like, a little counter. And gives you, like, +1 for each day that you read a specific amount of pages that you set. It's self-set, too. So it's great. It's a great way to just get back into reading and getting back into the full swing of things. That's my little 2 cents, though. If you want to add me on StoryGraph, I'm glad you asked, of course. If you want to add me on StoryGraph, it's the same name as everything else I go on and go by. Go by Dermonic, of course, Dermonik. If you go to StoryGraph, you can find me there. It's very fun, and you can see everyone's progress, and you can even do, if you have other people who read with you, you can do cool reading clubs, and you can talk about the book on little forum chats and stuff. It's cute. It's fun. And I think this is, it's a little indie thing. It's not truly, like, it's definitely not as big as Goodreads or anything like that. But it has a pretty good, it has a pretty solid base around it. I think that if you want something that goes a little bit more further out and beyond Goodreads, then definitely give StoryGraph a try. Anyway. I think the moment you've all been waiting for, DashCon 2! DashCon 2! First of all, why is it the second one? Why it happened to the first one? you don't want to know. You don't want to know. I mean, if you want to know, I can tell you. But, you know, if you don't want to know, you don't want to know. Okay, you want to know? Okay, fine. Basically, the idea behind DashCon, first one, was the idea of a convention that specifically targeted Tumblr users. If you don't know what a Tumblr user is, you haven't been on the internet, my friend. So you have to get back on the internet. Tumblr is, or slash was, depending on your view of how Tumblr is looking nowadays in its ecosystem, is essentially a very, 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 I'd say it's a more cohesive form of Reddit. I hate using Reddit as a comparison, but it's like it's essentially a form. It's a board. It's like a little form board where you can see all the different little topics and things and little niche fandoms that people could be a part of, you know? And obviously back in its heyday, there was a bunch of fan art, there's a bunch of jokes online. It was essentially almost as big as Twitter in a sense. Oh, maybe not, but it was pretty damn close. It was like a very, very popular thing. And then they got rid of porn. Besides the point, look, this was before that happened. This was during the heyday, 2014. We're back, right? 2014, there was a whole stint about how there was going to be a new convention for Tumblr users. Whoa, it's called DashCon. Crazy, right? I think it was going to be a two-day event. I'm pretty sure it was a two-day event. Whatever. They had a whole bunch of... They had, like, Steampunk Giraffe. They had Welcome to Night Vale. All these different, like, kind of queercore, kind of, like, interesting niche stuff that was going on in different fandoms and stuff like that. It was sick. It was going to be sick. And then they didn't have any funding. Then they didn't have any funding, and then they all the people they invited started leaving. Uh-oh, that's not good. So it just kind of turned into like a bit of a hay fire, and then a bunch of people obviously got their lick of fun by beating the horse while it was down, in a sense, right? It was already down. They were not doing well. They kind of scammed everybody. Big whoop. And then people started saying that people, because there was a whole thing about, there's so basically the idea was that there's a ball pit. Whoa, right? A convention with a ball pit. And then you went to the convention, it was literally like 2x2. And it wasn't inflated all the way, and it didn't look that appealing, and it was in a tiny little, it didn't look good. It didn't look good, I'll tell you that much. People started saying that people were pissing in the ball pit, you know, like stuff happens. you just piss in a ball pit. It didn't happen, by the way. I'm 99% confident it didn't. No one did that. So, you know, that was that, right? It went on in infamy. Everyone thought that it was pretty much done, and now it's kind of like the first nail in the coffin for Tumblr. And then obviously the porn bans hit, and then, you know, people stopped using the website for better. Better websites like X, the everything app. Yo, at least I can draw my NSFW there. At least I can do that. It's the least I can do. Besides the point, right? So essentially, this entire, to be more a little bit more realistic, this entire kind of meeting place where you could actually talk about cool stuff and different. Sorry, hold on. Different fandoms, different places. Like, Undertale was extremely popular there. A bunch of other fandoms were extremely popular there. Like, Homestuck and other different places where, like, all these interesting people could go around and meet. Which I thought was really cool. And it was sad when it left away, right? I was kind of bummed out about it. I was like, man, that sucks. Back when I was 15. Which was the same time I read The Hobbit, which is very interesting. Anyway. So, then what happened, right? Obviously, it fell under, then it started to rise a little bit back up. There was a bunch of influencers online who are more in the I need to stop saying queercore, but it's like the best way to describe it, right? The LGBT place, the meeting place, right? There's a bunch of people like Strange Aeons, which I used to watch back in the day, and a bunch of other people as well, who still we're doing God's work in keeping this place alive and thriving and alive, right? So eventually it comes to a head in, I think, 2024, when my sister says to me, hey, I want to get tickets to this thing called DashCon 2. And I'm like, ah! DashCon 2? They made a second one? And it was in Toronto, too. And I was like, what? And I was flabbergasted. And I was like, huh, that's interesting. I was like, you know what? Yeah, I'm interested in this. I want to see. And also, I had a little bit of a favor open for her to go to whatever she wanted to. Because she went to the King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard concert with me. So it kind of worked out in the end. It wrapped up together in the end. You know what I'm saying? So we went to Canada, which we were already in, by the way. And we went to Toronto. I think it was the Japanese Arts and Culture Center, which was a very nice place, a very nice venue. And let me just say, I've never seen any pictures from the actual event, except for like one specific picture where they're in like a very crowded convention hall, and it was just like a lot of people were trying to raise money for it, and then they kind of just like dropped the ball or whatever. Besides the point, this one looked way better because A, they kept their limits. It was only 550 people, right? Comparative to, I believe DashCon was over 1,000, I'm pretty sure. DashCon 1 attendance. From 300 to 1,000 people. That's a big range. That's a really big range. The attendance was expected to be 3,000 people, according to this Reddit post. So please, keep that in mind. They expected it to be around 1,000 to 3,000 people, but it was only 350 people. So completely under-attended in this first one, in this first instance. However, in the next iteration, my sister and I were a bit worried because we saw, like, we were like one of the first people at the front because it was like 8:30, it opened at 9:30, and we were just there, and we were like, what do we do? We're just standing here, and there's like a few people who are really cool who are talking about like Dante's Inferno and stuff, and I'm like, okay, I'm here, I just exist here, right? But then it started to pick up way into it. Like, I saw there was, like, crowds of people at this one specific event, right? There was Strange Aeons, which was one of the influencers in question. And there's a Tumblr user by the name of, I think, Croaker. Something to do with Kermit and the Joker and something. I was like, son, you can't tell me what to do. Besides the point, it was hyped up. There was a whole merch line dedicated to this battle that was going to take place at 2:30, right? And we were, like, amped up for it. I was like, damn, I'm going to get a cool sticker that has Strange Aeons on it. I'm gonna root for my team. Great. It was a fantastic opening, actually, because it was like a full crowd of people. Let me give you the quick rundown. Imagine an entire full crowd of people in a very solid-sized room with a gigantic inflatable battle pit inside of it, right? It was an inflatable ring that had two pillars, and it was like a fighting ring where you had like different you had to use your cushion to push them off, right? And it was dramatized to a point where it looked like a fight ring. Like, it looked like Fight Club, which was really funny, right? And it was tense. I think they probably choreographed it, whatever. They were one-to-one, and then Strange Aeons got the final hit, and everyone cheered and roared. It was beautiful. And then the Croaker started just singing, "Am I a Man or a Muppet?" in their full costume. I was taken aback. I was like, damn, they got it going. I'm flabbergasted. That's crazy. I'm genuinely taken aback by this. It should exist only in cringe, but it is somehow ascends beyond it. I should be like cowering in complete embarrassment right now, but I'm enjoying this. This is fun. I'm shell-shocked by this, right? Obviously, I didn't get my full bang for my buck because, you know, I wasn't a full Tumblr user. I haven't used Tumblr in years, probably since 2018. I was back in the day. You know how it is. But I was taken aback, especially by all the costumes there. I was like, whoa, so many people. I was like, this is crazy. There's a bunch of Deltarune stuff. Because Deltarune just hit the shop, by the way. There's another little news announcement that I missed. Deltarune hit the Steam page, hit a bunch of pages on Twitch, I think. And a bunch of people dressed up like those people. I haven't played the game, so obviously, no spoilers. A bunch of people, there's some people in Critical Role shirts. I was like, show! D&D show! Yeah! Let's go! And there's a bunch of people, to tie it back to Tolkien. All worlds read the Tolkien, by the way. There's... Apparently there's this joke going around of Gandalf with big naturals. Even saying it right now, I'm imagining my mother in my room just into shaking her head right now. It was just Gandalf with huge boobs, and I was like, yeah, you know what, yeah, that's what the Canadian spirit's about. We let the people, we let them dress up a Gandalf, but also the gigantic naturals. I guess it's great. There was like at least three people there, and I talked to one of them. It was fantastic. But when you talk, it's so interesting too, because when you talk to these people, like, you expect them to be obviously like a little preoccupied within their own niche, right? They want to talk to you about their specific niche, whether that be starting with Homestuck or whatever specific book they're interested in, or, you know, even off. I've seen some off content. If you don't know what off is, you can look it up. Off game. It's a very, very niche game that was made in, I believe, I forget where that was made in, but besides the point, Mortis Ghost, look him up too. Fantastic. He makes such great art, honestly. And there was a bunch of people dressed up as the Batter, and I was like, whoa! I took a picture with one of them. It was sick. They were so cool. I was genuinely taken aback. But like, they're just normal people at the end of the day. Like, I talked to them specifically, and they're like, yeah, I was thinking of doing this and this. I work at this place, you know. Like, they just have lives, you know. It's so interesting just to see all these people in this one specific place. It's so cool. But I think that's pretty much it. The last panel I attended was the Dungeons & Dragons panel, of course, regarding how to scare your players immensely, which I will enjoy and I will employ in a lot of cases regarding my players now. The Bag Fiend will come after you. Keep your bag of holding secure, please, God. Daniel, if you're listening to this, just know that Rosier is having a very, very, very apprehensive feeling about the bag right now. The bag is looking very, very mightily suspicious. Daniel, you have to be careful. You shouldn't let any creatures get in your bag. You don't know what they'll do with it. I'm just saying. Anyway. So, we're almost at time. I just wanted to give you a quick Disco Elysium update, because I played a little bit more of that game. Not as much as I would like to, obviously, because there's a big old backlog of games that I need to get to, and this game is still on my dang list. It's pissing me off, so I need to finish it, right? So, Disco Elysium. The game fully opens up, because the bridge got fixed. New place, new part of the map. I'm taken aback. And my burpees are getting worse. Help! I can't breathe. You know how it is. So day three, right? It's Wednesday, you open up, you can go to the bridge. Basically, the whole game centers around you solving the crime that's taken place and you've been neglecting for the past 3 days. Problem is you have amnesia. Uh-oh, stinky poopy. What are you gonna do about that, right? You are met by a lieutenant called Kim Kitsuragi. He tries to show you the ropes, but also tries to leave you on your own. And the whole game is kind of centered around you trying to define your place, trying to forge your identity, even though everyone will ridicule you for forging your identity. It doesn't matter what you pick, but this game, as I've mentioned before, is more centered around communism, because the game was created by a communist, which I don't mean as a slander or a slur, but it's not... I don't agree with everything the game says. I never said that. I just like the game as a whole sense of art, and I think it balances its views pretty realistically, in a sense, right? It has a full, fleshed-out world, I think, that has a lot going for it. It understands itself pretty well. That's what I mean to say. So even if the game was created, or the central idea of the game was created by a communist, you can still enjoy it for all the art, all of the side effects, and all the different writers who also worked on it as well. It wasn't just him. Is that your recap for you? I think it is. Besides the point, I just want to solve the damn case, right? So when I'm dragged along, a lot of the time. It's like, oh, cool, I found a neat little church that a bunch of people want to make into a nightclub. Oh, cool, I found like a fisher lady who wants to give me her home, even though she hates me and thinks I'm racist. I don't know. It's like I'm constantly trying to be dragged into a specific ideology. And yeah, obviously, like, a more neoliberal, whatever. But, like, I'm wanting, the main thing is to try to get the case solved, man. And I'm going to be pissed if the case can't be solved. That's the one thing I'm fearing right now, right? What if it's just never resolved and it's just open-ended? What if? What if? That would be terrible. Right? But I think the main thing I discovered through playing the game was just how in-depth it was, truly. Like, there's a whole specific, like, I spent an entire hour just inside of the one church talking to the painting, the stained glass painting of the wall on the, what's her name again? Whatever, like, almost, like, prophet, pope figure she existed as in, like, 300 years ago in, like, a specific era of time. And she had, like, her own army called the Army of Humanism, right? And it's specific, like, the intricacy of this game absolutely just astonishes me. Because, obviously, I'm doing a more analytical build. I have more stats into intellect. So it gives me more access to skills like rhetoric and logic and drama and all these different cool things that allow you to intellectually run circles around your opponents, right? And it just gives you little hints, right? So, like, you know, like, rhetoric might talk specifically about how the Army of Humanism was named that, because obviously if you want to be if you want to look good, you want to make sure that the opposition is against in the entire cause of humanity itself, right? And it gives you these little crumbs, these little tidbits that allow you to snack on like a little goose. Like, it's just feeding you breadcrumbs. It's very, very in-depth. It gives you so much to work with what you want to do specifically. Like, if you don't want to take the game seriously at all, you could just do a complete strength build, which I'm planning to do next run I'm doing. And just, like, because it gives you other skills. It gives you skills like, obviously, endurance, pain threshold, stuff like that allows you to withstand pain and deal pain, right? But also just gives you drug ability. It gives you electrochemistry, it's called, which is essentially your craving for drugs. It's like, yes, speed. I'd love to do more speed. Drugs, indeed, yes. Obviously, I do not endorse drugs. I'm very, very straight edge. But it's just extremely funny to me that it just gives you this avenue to just completely take the game not seriously and divulge yourself into the incredibly more stupider regions of this world that he created, which I think is cool. I think is really cool. And it kind of also ties back to the whole fantasy thing, too, because it was built out of Dungeons & Dragons, which then was built out of, guess what? Tolkien! We're back, baby! The whole TTRPG genre was built by Tolkien. Well, I guess the foundation was created by Tolkien. You understand me. So what does this lead us to, right? I think Tolkien was extremely influential in a lot of senses. But I think also that we have to know that these newer genres that are being created, urban fantasy, for example, and a bunch of other places, are being built not only through Tolkien's influence, but also through our own a perception of reality. And this is where I'm going to talk about Discworld for a bit, because I love Discworld. Discworld is such a fun way of looking at it, because it doesn't just give you a fantasy world to exist in and a whole different other set of problems. No, it takes the world that we exist in and transmogrifies it into an existent world that has similar capabilities but are explained in completely different ways that give you an entirely different outlook on these different rational views, right? And obviously Pratchett doesn't always get it right, but he gets it right a lot of the time. And he wraps it around in a shell of very, very entertaining British comedy that takes itself not too seriously at all, which I think is fantastic. I love it a lot, right? There's so many different, it has so much color, it exists in a completely different setting, but it also has such a realistic draw to it depending on where you are, right? Obviously, if you're going to read about
Samuel Vimes and his city watch, and him trying to protect the city that he hates, but also has to protect. It is his duty, and it fits so perfectly inside of his character. Or if you want to read more about the witches and how they talk about specific rhetoric and talk about how people internalize evil and stuff like that, and how fairy tales aren't always made up the way they are should be, and how dreams should be killed to pave roads for reality to settle in and for human empathy to actually take hold inside of, right? All these very, very complex issues are able to be unraveled and detangled. Even like even more broader abstract concepts like gods and religion is completely, I think, not solved, obviously not solved, but definitely explained in a more digestible, more fundamental aspect through comedy, through satiration, and through the characters that he writes. Because they're not only funny, but they also have a very deep human aspect to them. If this doesn't make any sense to you, read it. Read Small Gods, or read some of the more influential stuff. If you want to read about the internet, you can read about... You can go to, what was it again? It was Going Postal. That's another good one about the internet. If you want to talk more about how the police should operate, go to all of the Guards novels, Guards, Man at Arms. More recent ones like Thud and Snuff are also extremely good. Even though they slowly get into the part where he began to develop Alzheimer's, which was very depressing. Because I always expect people to live when I discover them, right? My mom gave the book series to me when I was just a kid, and then I was, what was it? It was 2016, 2017 when I started reading it. And it turns out he died in 2015. And I'm like, I'm completely selfish. I just wanted to get his autograph. I'm sorry. Is that so much to ask? God, they always take the good ones, man. But you know what? Hey, he has a fantastic full 42 book library that you can divulge in. And the good part also is that they're not fully connected, but you can make connections between the books, right? Obviously, there's going to be cameos between characters, and because it's a whole cohesive world, but most of the books are standalones. You can just read them and don't have to worry about that much context. So just pick up one of the books that I either recommended, or if you just want to look up like specifically what you would be interested in, you can ask Gemini or ChatGPT or Claude if you want to. If you want to get a cool refrigerator that spits out tungsten cubes, you'll get the reference. Just look up Tungsten Cube AI. You're welcome. But I think just reading is fun. I think it's good for humanity just to continue reading. Just keep knowledge and continue to not only take in nonfiction books, but also take in fiction. Because fiction allows you to take those ideas that you have and connect them together, right? They're not just meant for some fun childlike play, which what they were back in the day, but then they become something more. They become something intrinsically human. If you want to talk something about that, then you should read Hogfather. That's definitely a good book for you. But I think I'm getting a little carried away. Look, we're running out of time. I love you all. I hope you all have a fantastic day. And I'll see you in 2 weeks. Or actually, no, I'll see you next week, because I gotta make up for last week. I don't necessarily know what I'm going to be talking about. I might be talking about Into the Breach, because I've been trying to get into that game recently, so we'll see how it goes. Maybe I'll get some guests sometime. We'll see. A lot of people are just taking a whole 2-month breather, which I completely understand, but I gotta keep going. So, I hope I'll see you all next week, and is it Wednesday yet? I guess. Bye-bye! This the Critical Role reference. An interesting way to end it. I don't know how I feel about that. I feel like I'm stealing from somebody. That's not nice. I shouldn't do that. So I'll say I hope I'll see you on the flip side. Take care, everybody.